Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is Mike Lieberman, co-author of Smash the Funnel, The Cyclonic Buyer Journey, a new map for sustainable, repeatable, predictable revenue generation. And you are listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast, where each week I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book, and which was named by Forbes as one of 11 smart podcasts that will keep you in the know. My goal for this podcast is to help you discover new ideas in order to succeed in the quickly changing field of modern marketing and sales. Don't worry about taking notes. You can find links to everything linkable in this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And since you're a listener to the Marketing Book Podcast, if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or some other helpful resource that I know of for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction. Also, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Blinkist. Blinkist is an app that takes the key insights from the best nonfiction books and distills them into a format that you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes on your smartphone. Several of the books featured on the Marketing Book Podcast are on Blinkist. Right now, Blinkist has a special offer for Marketing Book Podcast listeners where you can sign up for free at Blinkist.com/Marketing Book Podcast. Blinkist is spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, and if you opt for the paid version, you'll get an additional 20% off, but only if you go to Blinkist.com/Marketing Book Podcast, or just click the link at MarketingBookPodcast.com. And now, on with the show. Today, we welcome Mike Lieberman to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about the new book he has co-authored with his business partner, Eric Kalis, Smash the Funnel, The Cyclonic Buyer Journey, a new map for sustainable, repeatable, predictable revenue generation, published by Inc. For more than 25 years, Mike Lieberman has been working hand-in-hand with CEOs and marketing and sales execs to help them create strategic revenue growth plans, compelling marketing strategies, and sales processes that shorten the sales cycle and increase close rates. Mike is the co-founder of Square 2 Marketing, which he established in Philadelphia in 2003 with his business partner, Eric. And today, they have clients all over the world, and they focus on helping their clients with revenue generation, which includes strategy, tactics, metrics, technology, and marketing, sales, and customer service execution at their clients' businesses. Mike spent his early career working for large corporations like D&B and Xerox, and along with Eric is the author of two other books, Reality Marketing Revolution and Fire Your Sales Team Today. And interesting fact, he met his business partner in grade school at summer camp. Mike, congratulations on Smash the Funnel and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Doug, thanks so much. I'm a big fan of your podcast and I'm thrilled at what you've been able to do with this program. And I've wanted to be on it for a while and I'm super happy that you invited me. Thank you.
Well, it's been a long time coming, and I'm very excited to interview you. It is a fantastic book. My friend, I think you got a bestseller on your hands.
Thank you.
Honestly, sincerely, and I read all these books. So this one, yeah, I needed to buy a new pen after I finished because I marked this thing up. But I was able to hear things that I've heard you talk about and speak about in the past. And so for the listener's benefit, I have seen you speak several times. I've seen Eric speak a few times. I've had phone calls with you. You're very generous. You spend a lot of time with other agency owners. You've had some coaching programs that I've been involved in. And then I even spent a week at your agency. You open your doors to a small group of other agency owners just to say, this is how we do it. This is how we figured it out. This is what didn't work. And so I guess what I'm saying, Mike, is I have spent more time with you than any other author that's been on the Marketing Book Podcast. And yet you're still willing to come on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I feel like I have a lot to say, and I feel like we have a lot of work still left to do in terms of helping businesses think differently about revenue, and you know, in terms of helping other agencies figure it out as well. So I guess this is my mission, is to tell this story over and over again.
Well, you're very generous to you and your company.
Thank
and
you.
You've got a lot of great folks working for you. So
thanks.
I'm a big fan, and I can say that because I've spent a lot of time with your folks. And this book, the foreword, was very nicely written by HubSpot co-founder Brian Halligan. And you said the book is to help people completely reframe their perspective on marketing, sales, and overall revenue generation. And I should add that this is one of those books that when I'm engaging with a new client, or a prospect rather, and you know how we want folks to realize this is what we're helping them do is sort of a strategic initiative. This isn't just some work that we leave at the loading dock, and help them understand some of the different changes that have to happen, but also what's possible ahead. This is an example of one that I could share with them. The only problem is if they're big enough, they'll then just hire you guys, which, you know what? That's fine too.
Right. I'll give you something back for that.
No problem. No problem. So the other thing that I just loved about the book that I hope more authors can do in the future is that you've weaved this this narrative like a fable of a IT firm, a professional services firm, throughout the book. So you'll explain some aspect of the new funnel that we're going to talk about, and then you tell this story. And it was like a book by Bob Berg or by Jeffrey and Brian Eisenberg. They wrote a book called, they've written several, but one of them is called Be Like Amazon, Even a Lemonade Stand Can Do It. Complete story narrative. It really was tremendous, and I'm glad you guys added that on. So I just want to start with one excerpt from the beginning. This book isn't about tactics. It's about helping you understand the true problem you face in revenue generation. Your competition isn't just your competitors. It's anything that deters a buyer from doing business with you. That's everything from choosing another provider to postponing a paralyzing decision all the way down to their love life and what mood they're in today. That's what you're up against. Not just other providers, but other influences, activities, and events completely unrelated to your company in any way. If you want to win at this game, you have to understand what game you're playing in the first place. Okay, first question. Let's go back in time just a bit. What is the sales funnel? When did it exist? Why did it finally die?
Yeah, this sounds like a test.
It goes from 1898, I think, to
2018? Yeah, 1898. So the funnel is over 100 years old. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's I guess it's not surprising that people today are now starting to uncover the fact that it might not be an accurate representation of how potential business flows into your company, right?
Right.
And my major issue with it is it's in inherent design assumes there's some gravity component to the funnel, and that things are actually being pulled through almost magically, and the result is a new customer at the end. And I think the major shift for us and the major reason we picked the cyclone metaphor, and actually it's a series of eight cyclones, is because the world today is just nowhere near what the world looked like even 50 years ago, or even, for crying out loud, 10 years ago. And the excerpt is an attempt to kind of describe the whirlwind of influences we are all in.
Let me ask one question.
There's
folks I hear from every week. It might be somebody who's the head of sales or the head of engineering, and they go, Douglas, I just started listening to your podcast. I'm suddenly in charge of marketing. What book am I supposed to read? Or a CEO.
Right.
Explain what the sales funnel is, if for no other reason, for the students that might be listening.
Yeah, so the funnel is basically this idea that there are more people at the top who are less ready to buy. And as you know, as you're interacting with them, either from a sales or marketing perspective, you're kind of narrowing down the amount of people who are ready to buy until at the very end, which is the bottom of the funnel where it's really small, you have your few people who have kind of made it through all of the gates and are now ready to hire you and say yes and become a customer. So it really like attempts to kind of show you that there are many more people at the top of your process. And at the end, you only end up with a few customers, right? And the goal has always been put as much crap at the top end as you could in order to get out at the bottom what you want. And our perspective, obviously, in the book is it just doesn't work like that anymore.
Right. And it presumes a linear process, which no longer exists.
Well, the linear process is the other problem. And like I said, the big problem for us is gravity. There is no gravity anymore impacting your – there's no natural force pulling these people through. And it is definitely not linear, as you identified. That is also correct.
Okay. So probably the biggest reason is because people don't buy like they used to. In fact, you even say the world has moved on. So compare and contrast that. And the reason I ask that is because there are so many companies that think that their prospects need to come to them for information.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert, they don't. And they think that they're following sort of this rational process, which, again, in your book, as I've seen it in a few others, I wish more would talk about this, is B2B purchases are far more emotional
sure.
than business-to-consumer purchases.
Actually, every decision is emotional primarily and then rationalized afterwards. So, you know, there are a ton, obviously, in the book, we write a lot about B2C stories because everybody can relate to them and there's nothing technical about that. But it's shocking how similar, whether you're buying a $250,000 piece of software or a $60 cell phone case, how similar the buyer journeys are. The only difference is the length of the buyer journey. Mm-hmm. So, almost every buying decision starts with an emotional decision.
Right, right. So I can remember seeing a graphic, I think it might have been from Forrester a couple of years ago, that showed the buyer's journey, and almost like they should have had the word question mark after it, because it showed this very complicated, erratic, it almost looked like a, not linear, it looked like a modern art masterpiece.
Yeah.
Where somebody just threw some paint at a... And there was,
yeah,
there
I think I might have, I think I might have saw that and thought that, oh, that's kind of interesting. Like as other people try to kind of illustrate what the buyer journey looks like,
right.
You know, you had an interesting point about, you know, the way things used to be. And if you do really want to go back to kind of like, you know, the Glengarry, Glen Ross days where like sales really, so I grew up in DMV and DMV in the 80s was a very significant sales driven company. All of the senior leaders had come up through sales. And if you wanted to be anybody at DMV, you had to be successful selling. And sales controlled everything, right? Mm-hmm. A company wanted to do business with them, you had to speak with a sales rep. And the sales rep doled out information, you know, on their agenda as needed in order to, you know, coax the prospect into signing a contract. And, you know, that was how sales was done. That really was it. There was nothing more to it than that. You controlled the process. And if you were a good salesperson, you could control the process and get someone to say yes. Now, inbound was, I guess, when inbound was first in 2010 time frame, that's when people started to give marketing more credit for controlling the process. And I think what has happened from that point up until recently is marketing then took over about 75% of that process. And in their doling out of content and email and nurture and web experience and interactive videos and podcasts and all of this content that has been created, marketing has controlled about 70. Someone has actually had enough, basically, and they throw up their hands and say, okay, I guess I need to talk to somebody. There was a handoff to sales and sales took it over, again, controlling the information and managing the sales process the rest of the way. I think today, that's all out the window, and the cyclones and the buyer journey and the ability for prospects to bounce around and move around depending on what's going on in their world are a lot more representative of, I think, the way people make purchase decisions today.
Yeah, and fortunately, you bring to mind the famous movie, The Wizard of Oz, and the cyclone, how predictable and how scary it was. And doggone it, I actually went onto YouTube and watched that scene again.
Yeah.
Just because it is such an ideal way to show how erratic and unpredictable and, you know, also sort of frightening it is for people. They really do need help. They need guidance in terms of making a purchase. And you even talk about your own company. You don't have salespeople anymore. You have sales guides, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. That's correct. Yeah. I mean, the scariness of what we're describing is really one of the major reasons why people continue to just hope it's the way it used to be and just continue to do things the way they used to be. I'm still shocked how many people just throw sales reps at the problem. You know, like, we need more sales, we need more sales, just hire 5 more sales reps, right? Like, just, and that is obviously not scalable. It's not efficient. There's like so much wrong with that. You know, it's for another podcast another day. But instead of really thinking about like what's broken with the whole system, they're still trying to fix it in the old way.
Yeah. So, Mike, I wanted to ask you to quickly tell the story that I found very interesting about the original equipment manufacturer client you had who they sold to the automotive industry, and how they wanted to advertise on satellite radio or a NASCAR or something like that. That was sort of a pivotal story for me in the book about old versus new.
Yeah. I mean, we still to this day have a lot of conversations with prospects who have done it a certain way. And even if they haven't necessarily done it, it's very easy to think that the way to do it is the way you see it done in the world, right? So I'm not a fan of NASCAR, but if I was a fan of NASCAR and I'd be watching, I'd be seeing all these brands on these cars, you know, cycling around, and the impressions that I'm getting and all the people that are there. And it's very easy to Google how many people watch NASCAR events, and it's a huge audience. So, you know, at the surface, it makes sense to say, if my company was simply exposed to this huge audience, I would do better, right? So it's not incorrect thinking. It's incomplete thinking, because, you know, like, then you have to start thinking, well, what does that cost and what are the results going to actually be? And am I going to be able to measure it? And again, that's still a practice that is coming of age. There are still a lot of people who don't know how their marketing is performing, and they don't know what they're getting for it. And I'm not even talking about ROI, because that's a whole nother story, like molecular ROI on marketing investment. But you should at the very least know how your tactics are performing. And unless I'm going to throw a website URL on the side of that car that I think someone's going to actually be able to see while the car is whizzing by at 240 miles an hour to drive someone to a landing page to see how many people actually saw the car and were interested enough in what the car was advertising to go check it out. Like, that's just not happening. So, again, it's a shift in thinking about how you market and how you sell your products and services, that there are just so many companies have not made that strategic shift in their heads yet. And honestly, that is one of the reasons why we wrote the book and continue to write books, is to just help people to disrupt them. Like, I'm a big believer in disruption. And I feel like I felt like this for a long time, but I continue to be optimistic that the world is just ripe for disruption, and that more and more people will start to realize that what we've done in the past, not right anymore. And mm-hmm. and what are my options now? What should I be doing? And the real problem here is what you should be doing is 100 times more complex than signing an agreement to put your logo on a NASCAR, right? Because honestly, that's pretty easy, right?
Yeah.
If you can pay for it, you can sign the paperwork, and you can be a sponsor of a NASCAR car or a sponsor of buy an ad in the Super Bowl relatively easily. But that's just not an option for most businesses. And the alternative is a very complex set of strategic conversations, tactic selection, analytic, setting up analytics and tracking the performance, and an application of technology to make that complex collection of things run smoothly and efficiently. And that is just not that easy to do, in my opinion.
Agreed. And I remember being at a conference once, and Gary Vaynerchuk, who I think you may have quoted in the book, he said, you know, the era of lazy marketing is over. And even in your book, you guys talk about how the era of bad marketing is over, which is great for folks, you know, who know what they're doing. But, well, I guess one of the itches that your book scratches for me is that it's going to help people understand the kinds of things they need to be doing. I mean, you must run into a lot of prospective customers who, again, think it's as easy as putting a logo on a car. It's just much more complicated. You don't want to frighten them, but there's a whole different approach that has to be taken.
Yeah, I mean, It's look, with the kind of marketing that we do and the kind of work we do with our clients, it's more like buy some Google ads. Like, here's $20,000 a month for Google ads. Like, is that going to take care of me? And, you know, no, actually, it's not going to take
Sorry.
Care of you. You know, buy some Facebook ads. You know, like, you know, today the big thing is ABM. Like, let's do some account-based marketing, right? Like, that's all we need. We're like, all right, slow down a little bit. Let's think this through. Well, who do you want to go after? Well, we don't know. Okay, there's your first problem. ABM is a targeted approach to marketing. So, yes, we can help you figure out who you want to target. You know, do you have the data of the people? No, we don't have that either. Okay, well, that's going to cost you some money to buy the data. And you don't want to just buy any data. You want to buy data where people have exposed some intent to having an interest in what you do, right? Yeah, that does make sense. So, you know, people are looking for silver bullets. People are looking for easy buttons. That has been a common song in marketing for my entire career. You know, what is the one thing we can do to blow up, you know, blow the whole thing up?
The lottery ticket approach.
The lottery ticket approach. And the sad part of that answer is it just doesn't work like that. And we try to explain that to our clients over and over and over again. And I think a lot of it is just flat out denial. Like, it would just, like you said, it would just be easier if we could do one thing. And so they try to do one thing, and it's certainly cheaper to do one thing. But, you know, you just see over and over again, clients that have tried one thing, it didn't work. They've tried another thing, it didn't work. They tried a third thing, it didn't work. And unfortunately, it takes people those kinds of experiences to start to say, look, okay, I give up. I clearly don't know what to do here. And maybe you can give me some idea about what to do differently. The other thing that I think is really worth talking about is people tend to focus on the wrong things. And what I mean by that is, everyone gets excited about the tactics. The tactics are sexy. The new website, the Facebook ads, the LinkedIn profiles, the social posts, the new ebook, the videos, the podcast, like those are sexy things from a marketing perspective. However, if your company's story is not correct, those things are not going to help you. They're actually a complete waste of money. So, you know, more times than not, when companies come to us and they're like, you know, Mike, Eric, like, we don't know what to do, what's going on here. And we look at what they're saying about their business. It's obvious, like, look, I can't understand what you do from your website. So, and by the way, people basically will give you 10 seconds on your homepage to figure out what you do. And if they can't figure it out, well, guess what? They're just going to hit the back button and go look at your two competitors. So, like, you know, let's try to fix that first. And not only do we need to understand what you do in 10 seconds, but I need something that like draws me in. Like, what's the story here? Human beings, and this is a big marketing issue too. Marketers tend to forget they're trying to talk to other people. Human beings get connected by stories and emotional, compelling emotional concepts. So, you know, and like I said, people make purchase decisions emotionally. So if I have 10 seconds on your website, I need to see something that disrupts me, that shakes me out of my status quo so I will pay attention. And then I need to hear the beginnings of an emotional story that draws me in. And if I can relate to that and I have issues that seem to be solved by what the story is about to be telling me, well, now I'm going to have a really interesting experience on this website, and I'm going to stick around, and I'm going to click around, and I'm going to download, and I'm going to engage. And that's really what marketing is supposed to be doing. It's not about creating a ton of stuff and publishing things for the sake of publishing or doing 4 blog articles a month. It's about creating those compelling, disruptive stories that pull the right people into your world so you can then manage their buyer journey in a really well-architected and well-designed way.
Amen. And just as an agency guy talking to another agency guy, I usually like it when I am talking to a prospective customer who has talked about how things they've tried haven't worked. I find them easier to deal with because they're more willing to listen, and maybe they've kind of gone through a little bit of hard knocks there and started to realize that it may be a little more complicated than it used to be.
I'd like to say I agree with you. However, lately I've been feeling like there's so much of that going on that there's now a lot of distrust in the agency community.
Yeah.
And they are here at my doorstep after their third agency, and I don't blame them. Like, they're asking really hard questions of us now. Like, well, what are you guys going to do that's different than what everybody else did? And why should I trust you guys? And, you know, you want to charge me more money than they were charging me. Why? Like, so,
sure.
You know, we are unfortunately, we're not doctors, attorneys, or lawyers, because those are, in my opinion, similar professions that have just a higher level of certification and a higher level of trust. And in many cases, you're not looking for the cheapest doctor. In fact, you shouldn't be looking for the cheapest doctor. You shouldn't be looking for the cheapest attorney or the cheapest accountant, right? You should be looking for someone that has the experience to take really good care of you and help you, you know, get better, get divorced, not pay taxes, whatever you're trying to achieve. And I my hope for our the agency industry is that one day we can elevate to that level, because I think that's really what's needed. The clients have to look at us like that and say, look, I hired two cheap agencies and did not get what I was looking for. I'm going now to the best agency, the best doctor, because I want to get better. I don't want to be frustrated anymore. And that's a big issue right now in our community.
Agreed. And I just to pile on, there's a fair amount of malpractice going on too, because there's time. I don't think the agency people always know as much as they need to know these days. And a lot of them are still, you know, more traditional, more like the press release marketers that Brian Halligan talks about.
You know, they build a nice looking website, but
beautiful.
When it comes to a website that's going to produce results, not so experienced at that. And you know, an unsophisticated purchaser is not going to realize that until it's too late.
Yeah,
that's also unfortunate.
Yes, and back to your love of NASCAR. There are probably some agencies that can build a beautiful NASCAR vehicle. But what you want to find is one that knows how to make the car win.
Right.
So you talked about tactics. There was something, a couple things earlier in the book that just made me want to carve them in stone. You talked about how tactics matter far less than a basic understanding of buying psychology. And then there was another page which really was just, it just jumped off the page at me. It said, we are far past the days of silver bullets and magic eight balls. Mm-hmm. Sustainable long-term revenue generation relies on a deep understanding of your buyer from before they even know they need you, all the way to dealing with them when they become irate. So with that, let's, in the remaining time, let's try to walk through some of these different cyclones. Mm-hmm. And let me just list what they are quickly. So we'll get to them as quickly as we can. There's pre-awareness, and then there's awareness, and then there's what you call education, and then consideration, and then evaluation, and then rationalization, decision-making, and ongoing delivery. So right off the bat, Mike, we've just frustrated everybody who thinks that all they need to worry about is awareness, consideration, decision.
Yeah.
So you're already throwing bombs, which is, you know, what we've come to expect from you and Eric. But pre-awareness, talk a bit about that. That's where they have a problem they don't even know about.
Right. So I probably wouldn't have even considered a pre-awareness stage a couple of years ago, but there's been such a movement to be more proactive with your marketing. And inbound's a very reactive practice, you know, be there when they're looking for you, which totally makes sense. But it sometimes leaves you feeling like you're not in control of how fast that can happen. So I think the response to that is this whole account-based marketing and targeted marketing, which is not new, by the way. It's just something that has recently been repackaged to support some of the technology companies. But, you know, this idea of going after someone that is should be a good prospect for you, the key to that is they're not looking for you. And they might not even know who you are. So in essence, you know, and I took a little flack from some of the people that work at Square 2 around like pre-awareness. Is that a thing? Like, you know, yeah, it's a thing, because there are people who need what you do and they don't know they need what you do. So they're not aware yet. I mean, you could call it something else, but they're not aware of you and your business and your solution. So, you know, it is a stage because you want to try to make them aware. And that requires even more well thought out, architected assets. Like, we are all, you know, you're going to laugh when I say this, but every time I talk to someone about this, they all like, yeah, we are all inundated with the horrible email campaigns from people who are asking for 5 minutes, or can I show you my demo, or, you know, the lately what they do now is they'll send you a series of three emails and it gets like a little bit more irate and they get a little more annoyed in their tone. And then they're like, well, you must be busy. So, you know, like, I'm not busy. I just don't know who you are, what you're selling, or why you're bothering me. Right. So the assets that you're going to use to get someone aware of you have to be really well thought out, and none of them are. I have yet to see a good account-based marketing email that actually, you know, disrupts me out of my status quo, wakes me up enough to pay attention to this email, and gives me a reason to click on it and engage with them. So there are still too many people doing this incorrectly, but, you know, if you're going to do it, you got to think through what does that initial touch look like and feel like.
So give us an example of a problem somebody's not aware of, but they should be.
Okay, so we had a cybersecurity client a few years ago who specialized in detection of the incursion after it happened. So I don't know how much you know about this, but sometimes people can get into your network nefariously, and then what they'll do is hide. And they'll hide until they're ready to do something. And they may never do anything, but they're there and they're in. And if they need to take action, it's capable. So they're capable of doing it. So the disruptive messaging that we came up for these guys were something so simple as your network might already be compromised. Wouldn't you like to know for sure? So if I'm the director of cybersecurity at my company and I get an email like that, first thing I'm thinking is like, it's not compromised. But I don't really know for sure. And if I don't do anything about it, am I now neglectful? Am I like not doing my job to at least pursue this thing here? Because if I'm wrong and something happens, I'm going to look really stupid. I might even get fired, right?
They might not even want to know.
Yeah. Well, if you don't want to know, I guess I could argue that you're not really doing your job, right? So I guess that's part of it, right? Maybe that would be the wrong prospect if they actually don't want to know, right? Right. But if they are interested, then that disruptive messaging, which got them thinking, was followed up with an offer to come in and not even come in, just remotely do a quick audit of what, and that's not the right terminology, but a quick review of whether they've been penetrated already.
Right. Right. Right.
And there was no downside to the offer. Like we'll take a look at your network and let you know if you've been compromised. And if you are, we can help you fix it, or you can fix it on your own, but we want to let you know. Right. So like someone that's thinking they're okay, someone that's not really looking around, but doing their job, as we said, why wouldn't they take them up on that? It's literally, there's no risk to them. And if they are compromised and they do uncover it, they can look like the hero to fix it and make sure that the company is safe and secure. So it just took a little thinking, and it took a little trying to understand the perspective of the potential prospect to come up with a message that is compelling and emotional and disruptive enough to get their attention. It wasn't about software. It wasn't about a demo. It wasn't about an appointment. It wasn't about those things that people typically ask for. It was about helping them do their job and be responsible with an area that they have been tasked to cover for their companies.
Right. So let's go to awareness, and that's where you talk about where they may know that they should do something about it. And I just wanted to read one excerpt. It says, it's been the same story in music, publishing, and scores of other industries. Despite the warning bells, despite the winds of change, despite watching their competitors being snatched up by global conglomerates, most business leaders just hunker down and hope to ride out the storm in one piece. Mike Lieberman, why do people wait to take action?
Well, they're waiting because they're not exactly sure what to do. So it's generally safer to do nothing than to do something you're uncertain about. They're waiting because change is inherently difficult for all human beings. Mm-hmm. We're genetically programmed to not want to change. Change is hard for almost everybody. The people that do kind of embrace it are just better at it than everyone else, but it's still difficult. And that puts us as human beings at a disadvantage from a business perspective. And that's why you see so many businesses get rolled over or disrupted in no time, because it is, for a lot of people, it just always feels safer and more comfortable to continue doing what we've been doing, even though we might know deep down inside it's not the right thing to do.
So a big part of that is then trying to encourage the prospect to start to take some action. Would that be correct?
Yeah. So awareness is really, if you're familiar with the term reticular activation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
The listener may not, but it came up recently in Steve Woodruff's book.
Sure. You buy a car, and, you know, next thing you know, you see the car everywhere, right? You never noticed how many people are driving this car because you never paid attention to it. But now that it's yours, you notice it everywhere, right? So the big thing about the awareness stage is I'm now tuned to the content that I'm looking for, right? I'm not active in looking for it, but I'm tuned to it. Mm-hmm. So if someone were to send me something related to a particular tangent that I'm pursuing, you know, I'm going to look at that, right? I may not have looked at it yesterday if I wasn't tuned into that, but now that I'm aware, I'm tuned into it, and I'm going to look at it. And that's generally the difference between awareness. Awareness is still not a proactive stage, but it's a stage in which the prospect is tuned into what you're trying to get them to start thinking about, which gives you some advantages from a marketing perspective.
Mm-hmm. Good. So then the next one is education.
Right.
Which I'm wondering if a lot of people think, well, why do we even need to to educate? Because you know how so many companies really just want to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
What is the true aim of education, as you explain in the book here?
Yeah, so education is when we shift from being kind of reactive to being proactive. So I really want to learn about this. Like, we're going to have to make a decision here. I can't put this off anymore. I have to get smart about this particular area of my business, and I'm going to learn about it, right? So I'm going to search. I'm going to research. I'm going to Google. I'm going to listen to a podcast. I'm going to go to a webinar. I'm going to watch a video. I'm going to immerse myself in this area of my business I'm trying to purchase. You know, I'm going to immerse myself in this so I can make a good purchase decision. Human beings want to make a safe decision. I will argue that you're never selling anything to anybody until they feel safe with you, your company, your products and services. And one of the things we do here at Square 2 in our sales process, one of the things I try to teach clients when we're working with them on sales process is it has to be designed to get your prospect to feel safe. Whatever that means to you in your industry, in your business, in your products and services, the faster you can get to safe, the faster your sales cycle will flow and the shorter it will be and the more you'll close. Now, there's also there's a pain element to the purchase decision that you don't have as much control over. So if I don't have acute pain, I may not make the purchase decision, even if I feel safe. And sometimes often that acute pain is not driven by us, but by driven what's going on in the buyer's world. So in my opinion, those two things have to be present in order to get a deal done. They have to be safe with you, and they have to have pain that's acute enough for them to take action to fix it.
Right. And just as a, you know, nod to good content marketing, you talk about how, you know, you need to help them better understand their problem and provide them the information they're looking for on the ways that they can address that pain. So people can sniff that out if you're not being straight with them.
You're also not, you know, if you're talking about yourself a lot,
yeah.
You know, like we see a lot of clients who are like, we have a ton of resources. And I look at them like, this is all like product guides and stuff about you guys and press releases and like company history. Like no one cares about that, right? Like, so, you know, if you start thinking about that stage as more of an educational stage, not about you, but about the decision they're trying to make, your content takes a whole other perspective and many more flavors, because there's so much you can generally educate a prospect about related to you and your business and your industry that gets them to feel safe with you as a company.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, as it relates to this, remind folks about the powerful principle of reciprocity when you're educating a prospect or giving them something helpful. You talked about Robert Cialdini in the book, in terms of his books, Influence as well as Persuasion.
Yeah. Again, we try to, I'm a bit of a psychology buff, right? I wish I had spent more time really understanding it in college. I kind of like, it was the thing you had to do that I didn't pay much attention to, but today I'm very interested in it. And it's almost, you know, how the brain works is critical to marketing and sales. So the concept of reciprocity is a little like when you go to a party and you meet somebody that you don't know. And if they're talking at you about them, it's a very low likelihood that you're going to think that this is someone that I want to be friends with, or someone that I want to spend time with, or someone that I, you know, want to get to know, right? You're basically thinking like, when is this going to be over so I can leave? And if you think about a different conversation at the same cocktail party with someone who is asking you a lot of questions about you and trying to get to know you and sharing information related to your interests and, you know, what you have going on, now you're thinking like, wow, this is a pretty cool person, and this is someone that I could be friends with this person, and I'm actually interested in them because they're interested in me. And a lot of that psychology of the way people interact with each other is mirrored in the way we like to coach and consult and deliver content related stuff for clients, because it can't be about you. It has to be about things that are going to help them. And when you're helping them, they will feel safer with you and they will be interested in sharing information with you that you need to do your job from a sales perspective. So, you know, if you think about it, like, how do you meet someone and become friends with them? It's very similar in how you get a prospect to engage with your company from a marketing and sales perspective.
Absolutely. Let's go to consideration. I'm going to quote from the book again. It's a rather quotable book there, Mr. Lieberman.
Thank you.
It's easier to fight the enemy you can see than the one you can't. Companies, and by that we mean the people who compose them, want to identify the competition and crush them. It's why they measure market share, brand awareness, stock price, and other such metrics. It's a way to tell whether they're winning or not. The customer is a prize to be won, a competitor, the dragon to be slain.
Right.
And then you say they have misidentified the enemy. So what do you mean when you say to people that don't think they have any competition, that they actually do have competition?
Yeah. Well, the consideration stage is, I think, misunderstood frequently. It's not so much about, you know, you and your two competitors. It's about all the other things they could potentially do. They don't have to hire you. They could do nothing. And in fact, doing nothing is typically the competitor that we all lose to the most, because what we just said a few minutes ago, it's actually the safest option. Right? I could literally do nothing and my world will not change and I will be happy. I may not, you know, achieve some of my objectives. The company might not grow, but this is what I know. And I don't necessarily want to have that blown up and all kinds of new things happening to me. So, you know, in consideration, it's about helping the client weed out some of those, the prospect weed out some of those things that they might be thinking are okay options. You know, you can't really do nothing because you said this was your top priority. And if you don't do anything to fix this in the next 30 days, your company's not going to hit its revenue goals. And then what's going to happen? You know, so doing nothing is actually not an option. And in our case, sometimes it's, well, should I hire a marketing person or should I hire a marketing agency? So sometimes our efforts from a marketing perspective and a content perspective is to help people understand the differences. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not clear to them. They think hiring someone is actually cheaper when it's not, because that person is still going to need resources and they're still going to need technology and they're still going to need help to do certain things that they can't do. So you're actually hiring someone and then spending money outside of the company to do things when maybe an agency could bring you the expertise and all those other resources as well. And teach your company how to do things differently. When you hire someone, you get a certain set of experiences with the person you hired. When you hire an agency, you get a lot of experiences in a lot of different industries that are often quite relevant across industry. One of the things I love about my agency that it's not vertically focused is I learned something in cybersecurity and I can apply it to my manufacturing client. He's like, where did you come up with this? Right. And I don't really tell him I learned this from my cybersecurity client, but it helps us be creative and come up with innovative ways to tell stories and execute marketing across different industries. So consideration is a tricky stage and one that people have to understand maybe a little differently.
Okay, but the next one, evaluation, explain what that is. And you say that this is where most companies blow it.
Yeah, well, this is probably like the clearest of the stages, because, you know, they've decided, well, we're not going to do this over here and we're not going to do this over there and we're definitely going to do something. So we've narrowed it down to three somethings, right? It could be three manufacturers or three agencies or whatever. I've decided this is the direction that we're going to go. And this is typically the handoff from marketing to sales, okay? And this is where people blow it most of the time. So marketing has done a wonderful job educating and advising and guiding, and they really have understood the buyer journey, and they've been have content in multiple formats, and the prospect's super engaged, and they say, okay, well, this has been great. I can't really take it any farther. I've taken it as far as I can, and now I need to talk to a salesperson. So right off the bat, they're not thrilled with the idea that they actually have to talk to a salesperson, because they're expecting to be sold to. But eventually, almost every deal ends up with a salesperson, right? Because you generally don't get pricing on a website. You generally don't get terms on a website. And there are generally questions that need to be, who am I going to work with? When can you guys get started? Can I see your contract? Like, those are things that eventually a rep will have to facilitate, right? Mm-hmm. So they know they have to speak with someone eventually. They're putting it off as long as they possibly can. They finally say, I'll talk to a rep. And then the traditional rep shows up and it's the hard sell. When do you want an appointment? When can I get your contract? Here's your pricing. When can you get started? You know, what's taking you so long? You said you were interested in this. And, you know, all of a sudden the defenses come up and, you know, they're taken aback. Like, wait a minute, this doesn't even feel like the same company I was just, you know, interacting with a few days ago, where they were educating me and guiding me and making me feel smart about what I was going to do. Like, this is the hard sell. Like, I don't want it. So
I thought Glenn Ross was 25 years ago.
That's where they blow it. No, yeah. You have to have a smooth transition. The experience has to continue. And this is why these buyer journey stages are so important, because that handoff is a critical part of the evaluation stage. But that's also a part where you can really start talking about sales and marketing alignment. You know, how are they telling the same story? I can't tell you how many CEOs I've talked to who have said, I went on 3 sales calls last week with 3 different salespeople, and I didn't recognize my company in all 3 of those meetings.
Mm.
And those salespeople are just telling 3 different stories about the same company, and that is a problem. That is a big problem. The story that was told through the marketing experience has to be continued into the sales experience in the same guidance and advisory way. That is how you'll get them to feel safe, and that is how you'll also differentiate your company. I actually had a really good prospect meeting where we got a verbal today with a new client, and she was saying to us, I've been enjoying your sales process. Now, I know what you're doing. She was smart enough to realize that we had a very well-designed and strategically crafted sales process, but she was like, I'm really enjoying seeing how you guys practice what you preach, because I'm going to want you to help me do something similar for my company. So, you know, you can help clients that sometimes don't always see all of the details that you're doing by giving them that experience and pointing it out to them. Like, look, what you've been going through with us is exactly what we want to build for you and your company.
Right. And I can remember a couple of years ago, you gave a talk, and I've heard you say this several times. You guys won a certain amount of new business, and you went back to the companies that had become clients, and you said, you know, what was it that made you, you know, tip the balance for us? And you thought they were going to say, well, you know, you guys are great. You're attractive people. You're funny, you know, whatever.
You're powerful and good looking.
Yes. Yes. And it was all about Eric, Mike, don't get the wrong idea. They were just compelled to anyway, but you said, most of them said, well, we just liked the process that you had. It was the experience you gave us. Obviously I heard a lot of Mike Lieberman make the prospect feel safe in there. Mm-hmm. And it's true. They don't see everything. But you know, when you go to Disney, which I know you're a big fan of, you don't see exactly how they go about folding that towel, you know, in a different shape every day. So let's go.
They keep the place clean. They pop up from underground, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. So the next one I thought had, and I think the listeners should understand each one of these. There's multiple chapters on each one exactly how to go about examining this stuff, and the checklists at the end of the book, and even tools that a lot of companies are using. Rationalization. I like that one because it had, again, so much about psychology. Mm-hmm. So talk a bit about that. Of course, you know, again, people don't make decisions rationally. They make them creatively, and then they back them up rationally. But even after they've signed the check, what's going on there?
Right. Well, so, you know, typically, you know, sales is about getting to yes, right? And what we've been finding lately is it's not enough. You haven't won when you've gotten to yes. And what happens is yes is basically the emotional deal, right? You know, I'm emotionally ready to buy from you. Yes, we picked you. But now we have to make sure all our I's are dotted and T's are crossed. And that's where the rationalization comes in. Like, you know, like, let me see your contract.
Well, it's also where the buyer's remorse might start to bubble.
Well, it's possible, but it's more about where you can blow the deal, right? So let me see your contract. Okay, well, here's my 15-page contract. It's full of legalese, and you'll need an attorney to review it. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, wait a minute. Like, I'm not an attorney. I can't sign this. Now I got to get in touch with legal. Wait a minute. Maybe I should have gone to procurement. I didn't do that. Am I in trouble now? Like you've really basically ruined your chance of getting that deal, because – no one feels safe when you articulate what I just articulated. In fact, that's quite an anxious, and it's a number of anxious statements, right?
How am I going to tell my wife I bought that sports car?
Exactly. Well, can you give it back? Because that's what she really wants to know.
Yeah.
So you can blow it there, right? When can we get started? Well, 3 weeks. Well, I was hoping to get started next week. When? How much is it going to cost? Well, $10,000. Well, I thought it was going to be five. Someone told me earlier in the process it was five. So there are still a lot of ways to blow it in the rationalization stage. And if you don't identify it as a stage, you don't pay attention to those details that you can still find yourself in a situation where you're messing up the deal that you now work potentially months to get. You're going to blow it at the very end, right? Mm-hmm. Even this is more of an evaluation stage issue, but I see this a lot. Companies show up to do their pitch, right? Which I hate the phrase, but everyone understands that. They show the concept of pitch means you're trying to get a ball past somebody, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what we're trying to do here. We're trying to share how we're going to help you, right? So their pitch deck is, 35 slides, and it's 30 slides about them and 4 slides about the client and how you're going to help them. And at the very end, they have, we're going to save you $1 million, right? Well, that's like opposite. The whole deck should be 5 slides, and the first slide should be, I'm going to save you $1 million, and here's how I'm going to do it. When do you want to get started? So there's a lot of places where companies blow it at the end of the buyer journey, and the purpose of the rationalization stage is really to make sure that you understand there's more work to be done when people are now trying to rationalize all the details of doing business with you.
Okay, so then next to last was decision making. And you talk about how this phenomenon of losing the buyer in the last mile, where are companies dropping the ball in the decision-making step?
Yeah, I mean, this is like after all the I's and dotted and T's are crossed, you can, you still need to get that paperwork signed. So, you may have not actually done your due diligence on who the decision maker is,
yeah.
Right? So, one of the things that we use when we talk to prospects is we ask very early on, well, who's going to make this decision? Oh, I am. Okay, great. Good to know. So when we get the agreement,
that's never the real answer either.
Right. You'll be signing the agreement. Oh no, I can't sign anything. Oh, who signs the paperwork? Oh, that would be the CEO. Oh, okay. So the CEO's the decision maker. When are they going to be joining us? Cause we want them to hear firsthand how we're going to help you. Or sometimes it's who's going to sign the check, because you really need to know the check and the contract or the decision maker. So we got to uncover that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another quick story. When I worked for a big travel company, we were pitching FedEx, and we sent our proposal over via UPS because that's who we had a contract with. And it didn't occur to anyone until FedEx called and said, you guys blew it. What are you doing sending us your proposal in UPS? No one even thought that was an issue. But someone should have thought, how are they going to feel when they get our proposal in a UPS envelope?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to think you're a bunch of ingrates. No, I'm kidding.
Maybe not. No, we didn't pay attention to detail, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
Right. So that's part of understanding that final decision is part of mapping out that part of the experience too, so that you have all those issues dealt with up front.
Yeah. So ongoing delivery, one of my favorite parts, and I wish it could be at the beginning, but you can't really write it that way. But ongoing delivery is the last thing. And Mike, you included what looked like some mathematical equations. I don't know if you realize that. But at one point, you wrote, current customers equals cheaper and easier. New customers equals harder and more expensive.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the importance and remind folks of selling more, to your existing customers, and why. I think maybe you could also talk about what's going on with marketing and sales, why they are not doing that. In other words, it's all about the net new.
Yeah. So there's really two important concepts on this delivery stage. One is you're 100% correct, and it's strange to me how frequently people come to us wanting to talk about revenue, and we ask them, well, do you ever market to your current customers? No. How many of your current customers buy everything from you? Well, maybe 20% or so. Oh, okay. So right there, there's a huge opportunity to drive revenue by simply marketing to the current customers. Right?
They already know you.
They already know you. They've already picked you. Hopefully they already like you. We'll talk about that in a minute. But there's a tremendous opportunity there to just start with some low-hanging fruit and present to them in the same way, educational, advisory, and guidance, not take 20% off, not those kinds of things, but focusing a consistent set of campaign messages and educational assets on your current customers to introduce them to other things that you do. So lots of times that's where we're starting with clients these days because they like the idea. It's easier for us to get started with that. We have a built-in audience. The list is not always as clean as maybe it needs to be because it hasn't been, you know, touched enough, but still there are assets there that can be leveraged quickly out of the gate. The second big thing around delivery is our businesses are transparent these days. So it's almost impossible to execute any kind of sales and marketing without advocacy as a component of that. So What I mean by that on the marketing side is if I can't publish some case studies and success stories, I'm going to be limited in the amount of marketing I can do for a client. If I can't show directories that have positive reviews, if I can't look at social where there's positive reviews, if I can't, you know, show that the company is getting positive feedback from its customer base, it's going to be harder from a marketing perspective. And then on the sales side, it continues. If I can't get clients to advocate for you in the sales process, it's going to be hard. Now, typically that looks like references, but it can be referrals. And one of the things we've been doing lately that has worked really well is proactive advocacy in the sales process. So, you know,
even gamify it.
Well, you can gamify it. I think you need to have a certain size client base to really gamify it effectively.
Right.
But it becomes some really effective, again, sales and marketing aligned tactics, which I like anything that's aligned between these two groups. But if I'm getting a client to send a prospect an unsolicited email saying, hey, I heard you're talking to Square 2. I would not hesitate to hire them, you know, for a minute. We've been working with them for a year. They're great. How helpful is that in the sales process to get someone to feel safe?
Oh, yeah. And you've even talked about how you guys have used some videos, which are very helpful. Hey, Mike, last question I wanted to ask about the book was if you could talk about, just remind folks why it's so important to merge sales and marketing, and if you could talk a little bit about the chief revenue officer.
Yeah, so the second book we wrote, Fire Your Sales Team Today, had a big emphasis on how the marketing, the different marketing and sales departments is just not effective anymore. And as we've talked a lot here, it's one experience for one person, right? Your prospect is a person, and they're going to have one experience. So to have that experience chopped up in different marketing silos, which is what we used to do in the old marketing days, to have it chopped up into a marketing and sales experience doesn't make sense. You need one smooth, seamless experience from click to close. And in order to do that, you need very tight marketing and sales alignment. You also need tight alignment to make sure that marketing is generating the right kind of leads, that sales is following up on those leads in the way marketing, you know, designed the experience. If, you know, if you're going to assume that marketing designs the experience and sales executes it, then that has to be a very symbiotic relationship. Sales has to provide a constant stream of feedback back to marketing to adjust that process. Everything has to be iterated and optimized very quickly and very frequently. And this is also something I see people blowing pretty commonly. They don't optimize their marketing frequently enough. They don't optimize their sales process frequently enough. The faster you can cycle or iterate around both marketing and sales execution, the faster you're going to get to that perfectly tuned experience that produces the results you're looking for.
Yeah, like so the one you described in the fable.
You just can't do those activities if there's no alignment.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's lots of new tools and technology out there to help with some of that thing. So, Mike, if readers took only one thing away from the book, what would you hope it would be?
I hope it would be that they need to think differently about what they've been doing. And, you know, the other thing I would hope is that in wanting to think this through correctly, they're make the very important decision to get some help thinking it through. I think it's very easy to try something that you haven't done before, and when it doesn't work, kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, yeah, that's what's stupid. I'm not doing that again. Like, that didn't work, right? If you've tried to get better at golf, you go to the driving range and you hire a golf instructor, and, you know, he or she tries to teach you some different things. And then the first thing they say to you is, look, when you play on the weekend, just do what you want to do. Like, don't make this a job, right? And that is to not get you frustrated. That is so that you can keep practicing and practicing and practicing during the week. So when you play on the weekends, eventually that muscle memory gets grooved and you're not even thinking about it and your game improves. There's a lot of similarities to this. You can't give up too quickly. You can't get frustrated. You have to have a long-term approach to it. Take Smash the Funnel and say, like, look, this is my instruction manual. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take me probably, in all honesty, years to get my sales and marketing where it ought to be. It doesn't mean it will take you years to see improvements and improvements in results, but it's going to take you it might never end. When I think about
it, I would say it shouldn't.
It shouldn't, right. I mean, the world is changing. Your products and services are changing. Your competitors are changing. Your industry is changing. So it probably shouldn't change. That's a great point, Doug. And you have to be wanting and able and patient enough to keep working at it and keep working at it and keep working at it and keep working at it with an understanding of what you're working towards. And that's where the metrics and analytics come in. Is it actually getting better? You can't fly blindly. But if you are seeing improvements, even if it's modest, stick with it and keep working on it and get somebody to help you. Because while you might find your way on your own, you're going to find your way faster if you have a guide.
Amen. So, Mike, what books have inspired your work and career?
I can go back to a lot of the Seth Godin books. When we started Square 2, I was a very big fan of Seth Godin, Purple Cow, Free Prize Inside, Permission Marketing, you could probably argue was kind of like the precursor to inbound. Right. So I liked Seth's whole focus on making your business remarkable. That's always been a piece of our DNA here. You really try hard to make the business stand out, and I think most businesses don't do enough of that. I recently read Drift's Conversational Marketing book, which I thought was, you know, almost as innovative as the inbound book was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little longer at this point.
Yeah, we just had David on the David Cancel on the podcast. Terrific.
Yeah, I think
book.
What's interesting most about them is they're kind of embracing the microwave economy, like how people need instant access to everything. And
yeah,
and they are giving us some new plays from a marketing and sales perspective that provide a lot of value quickly. You can accelerate things quickly with some of the stuff that they're talking about. So I like that. And I've been reading a lot about artificial intelligence at Square 2. We're building a software product that helps marketers get insights and recommendations immediately right out of their data. So basically skipping the dashboard and going right to insights and recommendations. Mm-hmm. So I've been reading a lot about artificial intelligence and read a really good book called Automating Humanity recently that just, you know, kind of got me thinking about this robots are coming kind of thing. And how do we fit into that?
Oh, interesting.
Ecosystem. Yeah.
And it's a different company name, right? Your that project.
It's MaxG. MaxG.ai is the company that produces that software for marketers and agencies as well.
Yeah, we'll make sure to include a link to that on your episode show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. So how best can listeners learn more about you and the new book?
They can certainly go to Amazon and get the book. Just type in Smash the Funnel. There's a smashthefunnel.com website. So if you want to take a look at that, there's some content. I think you can actually get the first chapter for free on that website. And there's a podcast, too, that we do called Smash the Funnel, the podcast. And it's a Netflix-style podcast. So we produce, you know, 8 to 10 episodes in a season and then publish it all at once. So season one is available. Season two is in production. So we've gotten good feedback on the first season of the podcast, Smash the Funnel. So season two is soon to be released. And that's where you can get some of this kind of content. You can find out a little bit more about me at square2marketing.com. And if you're interested in any kind of agency help, then agencies2inbound.com is a website specifically designed for agencies who are looking to grow their agencies and have me help them with that.
Yes, and we'll include a link to that. That was the program I was in that I mentioned earlier. I think you have another article every week, and I get those emailed to me, and then I even get the emails your agency sends out. So, loyal fan here. So, we'll include links to all those sites, your LinkedIn profile, your Twitter handle, and all the books you've mentioned on this episode show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com so that listeners can reach out to you, connect with you, and shucks, I hope they'll thank you for being a guest. And for you, dear listener, if you're listening on your smartphone and you have subscribed to the Marketing Book Podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app, all these links can be found by going to this episode on your podcast player and clicking on the show notes link. The name of the book is Smash the Funnel, The Cyclonic Buyer Journey, A New Map for Sustainable, Repeatable, Predictable Revenue Generation. The authors are Mike Lieberman and Eric Kalis. Mike, thank you very much for joining us on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Doug, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And that closes the book on episode 223 of the Marketing Book Podcast. For more, check out this episode's show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And if I can recommend a specific marketing or sales book or other helpful resource for whatever situation you find yourself in, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat and I'll try to point you in the right direction. My name again is Douglas Burdett. Special thanks to our sponsor, Blinkist. To support the Marketing Book Podcast and start your free Blinkist trial or get 20% off your yearly plan, visit Blinkist.com/marketingbookpodcast or just click on the link at marketingbookpodcast.com. And please join us next time as we welcome Jamie Shanks back to the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about his new book, Spear Selling, The Ultimate Account-Based Sales Guide for the Modern Digital Sales Professional. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast. This episode was produced by Sean Armstrong.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.